Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor Podcast. Our guest today is Marine veteran Ryan Coughlin. Ryan grew up in North Brookfield, Massachusetts. He was inspired to join the Marines by his Marine veteran grandfather who fought in Iwo Jima during World War II. Ryan served two combat deployments to Afghanistan, which made him appreciate the life he had in America. Towards the end of his enlistment, Ryan succeeded in qualifying for a lateral move to explosives ordnance disposal, but was denied re-enlistment because of the tattoos he acquired during his initial enlistment. They made him sign a document stating he failed to withhold the standards of the Marine Corps and attempted to prevent him from being able to enlist in any other branch of service. If you enjoy this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor or know anyone else who may, reach out to us on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you could email us at team@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
My name is Ryan Fitzpatrick Coughlin. I'm a MIC from Massachusetts. I served in the United States Marine Corps from 2011 to 2016. And I was a sergeant. I was an 1141, which is a basic electrician. I stress basic. So yeah, man, I'm from Massachusetts. First 18 years of my life, I grew up there. Central Massachusetts, Worcester County, a little town called North Brookfield. I'd say the most positive influence in my life was my grandfather.
Okay.
And he was a Marine. He fought in Iwo Jima, actually.
No shit.
He was a machine gunner, man. My mom said that, like, he had, like, four kids of his own, obviously. And he never, you know, really, like, got close to them and, like, changed them and took them out and stuff. But I was his first grandson. And, you know, he would babysit me, man. It was the first time they ever saw him, like, change a baby and, like, fall asleep with a baby. And it was me.
Yeah.
You know, so, we formed a bond when I was young, man. Mm-hmm. And, I remember him just being just a person that I looked up to. You know, I look up to very few people. I respect is, you know, is few and far between with me, man. And, he was just an amazing fucking person. He was a good family man, all that stuff. So he actually passed away when I was 13.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like right when I was starting to get to know him on a man to man level instead of a grandson to the grandpa level.
Yeah.
You know, right when that was starting to occur, you know, he passed away, but he had diabetes, you know, he had a couple toes cut off. But, you know, he was that stubborn jarhead man who would, you know, two months after he just got a toe cut off, you know, my grandma's calling my dad, like, come plow the driveway. Cause, you know, we got 2 feet of snow in Massachusetts, and we pull up and this motherfucker's in his cast out there with a snowblower. He's 70 years old. You know what I'm saying? Just.
They were fucking built different back then.
Man, I'll tell you, they were, man. And, he was no exception, man. He was a great man.
Was he your inspiration on why you joined the Marines?
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah.
So I had his dog tag that he wore in Iwo Jima. I wore it in my boot in
no
both
shit.
My tours to Afghanistan.
No
yeah.
fucking shit.
Yeah.
You still have that dog tag?
I don't, man. I don't.
Wow.
Some shit ended up happening with a house back in 29 Palms. And,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, luckily I have that battalion book. That's like my prized possession that I have from him is that book. Cause that was his. So I was kind of that kid who their parents would say, like, oh, don't hang out with the Coughlin kid. You know what I mean? Mm. The Coughlin kid, he's always out doing something He's always out doing something skeevy, doing something slimy, whatever, you know? And I was that kid, man. Yeah. And, back then when I was a dumbass kid, I took pride in that. I loved being that kid that you didn't want to see at your house with your daughter or your son, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause you're getting into some trouble, you know? I was friends with everybody, man. I was never in like, I never liked to click myself up in high school. I tried to be cool with everybody. Mm-hmm. I still try to carry myself like that to this day, man.
Yeah.
You know, I'm friends with everybody. I don't care if you're, you know, if you're somebody who likes to stay in and watch Netflix for 30 hours straight, or if you like to go skydiving and hiking and whatever mm-hmm. it is, man, and everything in between, I accept everybody for who they are, man, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I feel like, I'm happier that way. Man, so it's weird, man. This job I had when I was in high school is washing dishes at this restaurant called Lad's. They're still open, bro, in Rutland, Massachusetts. Bomb-ass food. And, dude, that shit sucked. I was, even on my days off, I'd be out there mowing the lawns. I was Mr. Do Everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was pretty much the house bitch. And that taught me discipline. It taught me punctuality. It taught me dedication. It taught me to take pride in your work a little bit before I joined the Marines, man. Mm. You know, and also, growing up the way I did and, you know, hanging out with the people I did, man. You know, I also learned to carry myself a certain way. You know, so I approached it, you know, both feet in, man. I knew what I wanted. You know, I waited till the day after I graduated to go talk to a recruiter. I did. You know, I waited a couple months and I was gone. And I'll tell you what, that those shitty restaurant jobs were really got me ready for boot camp.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. It's mental, bro. It's 90% mental.
Yeah.
You know, that if you can think your way and be like, I got this. This is what I want to do. I want that. You keep your eyes on that Eagle Globe and Anchor.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not a piece of cake by any means, but, you know, right. If you put your mind to something, man, you can do it.
Where'd you go to boot camp?
Paris Island. Same place my grandpa went to boot camp. For all you military people, man, you know, I'm going to say sand fleas, you know, there's nothing around, you know, we don't see any kind of life. There's just a base, you know, the girls are over there, the 4th Battalion. Mm. I don't know what it is nowadays, man, but yeah, 4th Battalion's over there, the females. So it is, it's different over there, man.
Any difficulties getting through boot camp at all?
Nah, man, you know, like 2 months into it, I remember this dude that I had, Sergeant Walker. Man, I always remember him. He was a dark black dude, looked like a G.I. Joe when he took his shirt off, because he'd walk around with his cover and no shirt and shit, mm-hmm. just because. And like 2 months in, he stopped. One day we were all online, he looks at me and he's like, "Who the fuck are you?" I'm like, you know, Recruit Coughlin, sir. He's like, "You ain't in my fucking platoon," you know what I'm saying? And I'm just like, "Yes, I am." And, you know, man, that's what I wanted to do. That's what everybody told me to do, and so that's what I did. You know, I did what I was told. You know, obviously after that, I got fucked up for a couple days, and then they forgot about me, but
yeah.
and they move on quick, you know?
Right. So, out of boot camp, I imagine you go to your MOS school. Where was that at?
Camp Lejeune. It was in Courthouse Bay. So they train combat engineers there. They train electricians there, water dogs, which is like plumbers, you know, generator mechanics, all that utility stuff.
You learned a lot of good shit there.
Yeah, I learned actually some commercial wiring. That was cool. We learned, you know, the military wiring with the MEPTIS panels and all that stuff. So yeah, actually, you know what? They do teach you some good ass shit over there, man. They do.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't like it. I didn't like my job. That's why, you know, we'll get into that, but I was trying to lap move near the end of my enlistment. I didn't like what I did, man. Yeah. I like to hook and jab. I didn't like to plug stuff in.
Yeah. What weren't you liking about it?
So as much as I did feel like a Marine and feel like I just felt like I could make more of a difference, man. Mm. Don't get me wrong. You know, when you're over in Afghanistan, dude, and you give people power and air conditioning, motherfuckers, dude, that you get hooked up. You become friends with everybody, you know, the kind of motherfucker I am. I talk to everybody anyways, you know what I mean? So people be, you know, within 2 days, we'd go to from fob to fob, fix power grids, set up power grids. Within 2 days, bro, I'd have half the base calling me Boston or Mass or some shit and be like, "Oh, you got a problem with your AC? Go get fucking Boston over there," or whatever, you know? I never really knew that I had like an accent, man.
Yeah.
In MOS school, like the first or second day I was there, we did a little thing where everybody stands up, they say where they're from, you tell something about yourself. So, you know, I don't have a thick accent anymore, you know, but back then I had more of an accent, you know. So I stood up, I was like, "Oh, I'm, you know, Private PFC Coughlin," whatever I was then. Like, I'm from Worcester County, Massachusetts. And someone was like, hey, say Arnold Palmer. And I was like, "Arnold Palmer." And everybody starts dying laughing. I'm like, "What the fuck is everybody laughing?" I'm like, "Oh, shit." Like, we'd be talking different over there. Fuck. Some guy I knew in the Marine Corps, I forget his fucking name, man. He was from Massachusetts as well. And in the town, when Jeremy Renner, you know, James Coughlin, he goes and they, like, reminisce after he pistol whips his brother. They reminisce how he did time in Walpole for shooting that guy. Mm. That guy, that was a true story, I think. This is what I heard. It's a true story. And he has a set of twins. And the twins went and saw the movie, and they didn't know that like little snippet about their dad was going to be in the movie.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's what I heard, man. You know, sounds like... Massachusetts is small, man. You got to think. You know, Massachusetts is smaller than Southern California, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to not know everybody. It's hard to get away with shit. Yeah. You know, people know every nook and cranny of that state.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So you end up doing a lap move then from your job?
By the end of my enlistment, I was a sergeant, so I could, I think I was a corporal when I started my lap move, but, I wanted a lap move to EOD. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, so that was later in your enlistment.
Yeah. That was like within my last like year and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into, you know, talk to me. You get done with your, MOS school, You get dropped to a unit. What unit were you in?
Yeah, 3rd CEB, man. 3rd Combat Engineer Battalion.
Yeah, talk to me.
Shout
out,
man. That's my boys right there. I got there a fresh boot the first night. You know, they were hazing me, throwing the beer bong off the third deck, making me go get it, and then doing it again, making me. I was like scrubbing some dude's tub. I was drunk at like 3 a.m. And I flew into 29 Palms, man. I was fucked up already. I had partied, you know, my last night in Massachusetts, and I was feeling like crap. I smelt like a bonfire. It just a wreck of a night, man, you know, and so I checked in and all that stuff. Didn't seem that bad, but, you know, once I got to that first day at work and I started getting called boot, I realized what I was. I was somebody that hadn't deployed before. That's a 3rd CEB, man, you know. Us Pogues, man, if we're a combat unit, then we go all out, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. That was a combat engineer unit. So yeah, you know, if you hadn't deployed, you weren't shit, you know, yeah. And that's how it was, man. I definitely stood out among my peers, you know, as a boot. When I do something, I go all in, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Marine Corps was no different. I was proud to wear U.S. Marines on my heart every fucking day, man. Mm-hmm. You know, I wore that shit loud and proud every day. And, even though I didn't really like my job, I still worked my ass off at it. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. How long did that initiation last?
I mean, pretty much until we deployed. So I got to that unit in June of 2012, and we deployed by the end of March of 2013, we deployed.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So I had a pretty long stint as a boot, but it was cool. You know, I made a lot of good friends. You know, I ended up, the guys that would chew my ass at work, I wouldn't fraternize with them, but they were good leaders to where they would, like, you know, give me advice off of work too, and be like older brother type figures, man. We had a good ass unit, man. There were some good people, you know. I remember Corporal Monterosa, good people. Corporal Carlson, you know, Corporal Simpson, good motherfuckers, man. That I'll remember for the rest of my life, because those were dudes that went on a deployment before me. They were senior to me, man. They impacted me, man. You know, I took a little bit what I liked from each of them, and also other role models, and I instilled that into myself when I became an NCO. A boot is like it's like being the pledge at college times 1,000.
Yeah.
You know, and it but everything is for a reason, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason behind everything.
Right. So you end up going to Afghanistan with these guys.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Talk to me about that.
So yeah, man, Helmand Province. You know, we all started out at Camp Leatherneck. Most of that deployment, I was fob hopping, man. I spent a lot of time at Sabi Kadam. I did spend a lot of time at Leatherneck too. I spent some time at Dwyer, Shirgazi. There's so many different, I can't even remember a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just fob hopping, man. That's what we do. You know, going out, whether it's a convoy or on an Osprey or a 52 or 53, whatever. What is it? 53? A helicopter? I forget, whatever it is.
Yeah, the 53s and 46s.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we'd, you know, we'd go to the AGDAG at Camp Leatherneck. They'd fucking, you know, fly us out to wherever. We'd go and fix whatever power grid or do whatever we needed to get done. You know, sometimes we'd, the fobs that we would go to, we would patrol with whoever, and we'd go forward to the little Afghan, the ANA PEBs, and, you know, fix their little shit, you know, as much as we could, change their oil, at least in their generators, or do whatever we can, man. So, you know, it was helping the greater fight, you know, it definitely was. And, we did route clearance as well. We were with route clearance, and that's, because that's what 3rd CB did. That's what the combat engineer, that was our mission, was route clearance.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's how I got, you know, the idea of EOD in my head. I was tired of watching bombs go off, man, on the other side. So, I wanted to stop it before it happened.
Did you experience some of that?
Yeah.
IEDs,
yeah,
man. And all that?
Yeah, dude. And over there, bro, it made me a man, you know, it made me a warrior, but what it did is it made me appreciate my life, man.
Mm.
You know, being over there, sometimes fearing for your life, but you also, the first step to defeating your enemy is respecting him, man. And I definitely respect their culture, because if you go over there and you see somebody literally wiping their ass with their left hand, you know, you start to appreciate your life in America. I remember we would have the big trams, the big forklifts. I remember I saw some guy back into like a mud hut, somebody's house, just back into it and just keep going like nothing happened. That's somebody's fucking house. They came back that day to no house. Fuck. Whether they're shitting in the corner or not, that's their, you know, that's their coverage, man.
Yeah. Talk to me about some of the jackassery that you got yourself into.
Man, within the first like 2 weeks, man, I remember me and my buddy Simpson, we were moving some drywall full of just wires because we were looking for like outlets or something. So we have the forks come over and move the little drywall, you know, while we dump it over and we're looking through the wires and I find a sandbag. I'm like, and I reach in and I see that like this something, man. And I grab it. I'm like, hey guys, look, I found an IED. Oh my God. And I literally pulled out a Pennzoil can, like a textbook IED in my hands, bro. This is back when I smoked. I remember I had a cigarette in my mouth and I was like, all right, take a picture, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just holding it. Well, and eventually I just tossed it, you know? And
you realize it was a fucking IED when it was still in your hand?
Yes, but as I was picking it up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I was joking. I was like, oh, look, it was inside of a sandbag and it was a literally textbook Pennzoil can IED. But that was because it was a fucking dud, man. I think it was one of EOD's like practice duds or some shit. So we were freaking out for no damn reason, man. Right. I just touched the damn microphone again. But yeah, we were freaking out for no damn reason, you know? Man, I remember we used to, whenever we'd go to a base, man, we'd be there for a little bit. So we'd make nice with the civilian contractors, man, because they got hooked the fuck up. You know, we had one guy named Brett, I think it was with Garda World. He'd be making us ribs like 3-4 nights a week, man, because me and my buddy Simpson, they put us at Sabi Kadam. I think they like forgot about us or some shit, man. We were there for like 3 months, dude, just me and him in the transit tent. You know, so we're just kind of doing our own thing. He got promoted while he was out there. You know, I was a Lance. You know, we were just going to the gym, watching TV, you know, making sure everybody's got power and shit, you know. And man, it was, I formed some of the best bonds, man, with people. That was with 3-4, I think, actually, the dark side. Yeah, them motherfuckers were cool, man. They do the little prayer before we go out and patrol with them and stuff. The little, I walk in the valley, that's, man. Those dudes are cool, man.
Shit gives you chills, huh?
Man, it's cool. It's cool. The camaraderie, man, is just, it's cool in a chilling way, and it's cool in a fascinating way, too. You know, that camaraderie that you build with people just from embracing the suck, man. That's what it's from.
Yeah. You know, what other things, you know, you mentioned about when you're out there, you just really learn to appreciate the life that you have back here in the States. What kind of other things out there did you see that made you, you know, appreciate the way you live here?
Man, that's the only place you'll ever see five people on a motorcycle, man. On like a, you know, on like a little crappy motorcycle. You know, you see trucks driving by with 10 people in the back, man. It's hot as shit. You know, they're religion, you know, they're Muslim. You know, they pray multiple times a day. One of the hottest parts of the year, they celebrate Ramadan and they don't eat from sun up to sunset. You know, it's like I said, the first step to defeating your enemy is respecting him, and that's how I first came to respect my enemy, was their dedication to their religion, man. And you know, I found out in life, if you have dedication to one thing, you're gonna put that dedication into other things as well. And you know, in life, man, it's, you get out of it what you put into it. You play stupid fucking games, you win stupid fucking prizes, you know?
Yeah. When you were done with that first deployment, did you feel like a changed man at all?
Yeah, bro, absolutely, man. Yeah. Yeah, I felt like I look back at it and I was still like just a little kid, but I felt like a grown ass man in a way, you know? I felt like I had maybe made a difference in the world, or at least in a little, you know, enough to where I was pretty happy with my life, man. Yeah. But then, you know, a couple weeks after I got back, you know, I started having nightmares and all that shit. And
after the first appointment?
Yeah, man, I just kind of, I mean, I kind of knew what was going on, but I was just in denial. You know, and I went to, you know, base mental health or whatever it was. I forget what it was called. But I ended up going back not even like 3 months later after we got back. I ended up going back. So like I had like somebody I was talking to, and then I just ended up going back and not, you know, I didn't have a shrink to talk to while I was deployed
back
again.
Back to Afghanistan?
Yeah, because you know how it is when you get back from deployment, you know, you work till like 11, 12 o'clock, then they release you, you know. So like if I really had to skate, I would go to base mental health and like, you know what I'm saying? I maybe seen him on like a one-to-one, like open talk, like not intake, like maybe once.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember some old guy that didn't really give a shit anyways.
Yeah, yeah. So you go back to Afghanistan 3 months after you got back?
Yeah, man. I went back. They were looking for a volunteer. They needed my MOS or something, and they needed a sergeant. I was only a corporal. But I had been less than 2.5 years because I got a combat meritorious promotion on my first deployment.
Oh, wow.
You know, so yeah, I was a young corporal, fresh back from deployment. I was fucking ready to go back, man. You know, yeah. so I did a couple, and 3.5 months later, I found myself back there.
Yeah. What did they meritoriously promote you for? Just for doing a good job?
Or yeah, just for doing my shit.
Just for being
man.
A good fucking Marine?
Yeah, just for doing my shit.
Yeah, I've seen that happen multiple times. I know sometimes it's for some specific incident, and sometimes it's just for being fucking squared away.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I like I said, man, I try to, if you try to be just a little bit better, you know, than average man, then you'll stand out. You know, even in the Marine Corps where you have a lot of like alpha males and alpha females, it's still... You know, if you just give it a little bit, man, you could probably stand out.
Yeah. What was that second deployment like for you?
So, yeah, the second deployment, it was just me who left. I was attached to 1-7 on the bus ride from 29 Palms to Riverside to the AGDAG at March Air Force Base. I didn't know who I was going to be with. I didn't even have a rifle. I had tap gear. I had my stuff, but it was very unorganized, man. So I was out in the smoke pit, some tall guy. He says, "Hey, Corporal Coughlin," and I was like, turned around. I was like, he's like, "Yeah, come here." So I go in the corner of the AGDAG, and there's like 14 guys around there. I was like, "All right, we got him." He's like, "Okay, I think that's everybody." And somebody, one of the staff NCOs, had a roster, and they're like, "All right, so this is everybody." And they had told me in my—I don't know if it was in my orders or they just told me, like, "Yeah, you're going to be with an immediate action team." So it was literally 14 dudes. You know, I think there was we had like a captain. We had a gunny, a couple staff sergeants, like three or four sergeants, five or six corporals, and like three or four lances. All different MOSs. We had combat engineers. We had electricians. We had we had some water dogs. We had what was some guy? ATC. Some guy was an air traffic controller. So we had all kinds of different MOSs, and we did BOSI, which is base operations and specialties and integration or something like that. It was just so unorganized, man. I almost held up that deployment literally because they sent me to the AGDAG without a rifle. And I'm telling them, I'm like, I need a rifle, you know, because the reason they did that is because I was with 3rd CEB. They knew that on that deployment, they would be disbanding. So they didn't want to give me one of their rifles. That's why they did it. And they're like, "Oh, you'll get one. And we're about to go on the plane, and I tell my staff sergeant, I'm like, "Hey, I still don't have a rifle, man." You know, because by the time they found me, it was like probably 20 minutes to boarding time. I forget, we called Jesus Christ and everybody else, man. And the flight was held up like 10 minutes, and I was the only one out there. Everybody was on the flight. Everybody knew what was happening, too. Finally, someone sped up to the gate, skirt, gets out with my rifle with like NVGs, some mags, blah, blah, hands it over. It was like some staff sergeant from the armory or something. Puts that shit in my hand. I'm fucking booking it, you know, pushing up to the plane. I get on, everybody's looking at me, you know. But I mean, back then you could tell who was a fresh boot because you used to shave your head on your first deployment, you know, and I had a head full of hair. I just got back from a deployment and I was just looking around like, I don't give a fuck, you know what I mean? But in my head, I was like, damn, I almost either missed or held up that whole deployment, man. But, you know, shit like that, you know, it, just little unorganized shit, man. People just kind of overlook and don't think like, yeah, that shit, shenanigans that goes on in like a regular office, man, it happens in the fucking Marine Corps, man. It's just with our stuff.
Yeah, shit, man. So you go over to Afghanistan this time as a corporal?
Yeah.
Were you a squad leader in charge
of? Yeah, I was a squad leader, yep. That was my first time like having like a combat role. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a pogue. You know, and it was cool, man. You know, I had we do Ranger file patrols. That's pretty much as complicated as we got, you know, and I did convoys. I mean, we used to, I would be gunner sometimes. I'd be, you know, a driver and I would never drive or anything, but, every convoy I'd be involved somehow, man. You know, I learned a lot of the stuff that I signed up to do, man, you know, and for a fucking poke, man, that's cool. That's cool for us, man. You know, it's, I like it in the Marine Corps because, unlike the other branches, like if you have a job, you might be doing something completely different in country. It's like whatever kind of you know, other you know, branches are your job. You're gonna do it no matter what. That's what you're gonna be doing, dude. The Marine Corps is the most gangster entity in the world, man. They don't care who you are, what you've done, how many Purple Hearts you have, how many combat V's you have. They'll fuck you over, man, real quick. They'll do it.
So, you have any interesting other stories from that Afghanistan? From that second deployment?
No, not so much, man. You know, I mean, I learned to, we did a lot of patrolling, just, you know, Ranger file patrolling with 1-7, actually. It was with, I want to say it might have been with, yeah, it was with Suicide Charlie, actually. We did some ops with them, and then I forget who was there before them. Because I went out to Afghanistan with 1-7, but I got to Camp Dwyer. That's where I was pretty much the whole deployment. Mm-hmm. And there was another unit there that had been there. But once they left, 1-7 came in, the guys that I actually flew out with. Mm-hmm. You know, but I had been there a couple months already. But it was weird because Camp Dwyer, where I was, you know, I had been there 5 months before, and it was like this utopia in the middle of Afghanistan. So was Camp Leatherneck. 3 months later, I go there, and it's like, you know, it was the end of the war. We were retrograding. We were tearing shit down. That's what we were there to do. So by the end of the deployment, it was supposed to be a year-long deployment. We were all supposed to take R&R and everything, dude. So like 4 months into the deployment, they said that whoever changed their plans, and they're going to rebuild this base back into like a permanent structure army base. So one day, dude, there's like 300 Marines on the base. Okay, a couple army guys come and survey, a couple sergeant majors, blah, blah, blah. Within a week, dude, there's like 500 army motherfuckers on the base, dude.
Oh, shit.
They're building a movie theater. They had a brand new chow hall within 3 days. It was just like, it was great, bro. It was great. Their sergeant major was like 340 pounds, dude. It was great.
Oh, fuck, dude.
And that fool slept next to me, too. He'd be snoring. I'd be like, we're getting mortared. Like, so being there, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and literally their sergeant major, and this was third cab, dude. This was the Stetsons with the Spurs, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, no offense to no army cats. Army's fucking, army's rad as fuck, bro. But yeah. That third cab sergeant major, he was a beefcake.
Oh, man. Anyways. Yeah. That's funny. So you get back from Afghanistan, and you extended for a year. Did you have to extend because you were in Afghanistan?
No, actually. So I extended because... So one day, all right, so I got back. I got thrown into the wing because my unit disbanded while I was in Afghanistan. They threw me into the wing. So all of a sudden, you know, I get to the wing, and I wanted to lat move. So I did screening for EOD, which is like a week where they haze you in the bomb suit. They do like they do a bunch of little shit, you know, and it's fairly difficult, man. You know, I'm not like a crazy PT guy, you know, and I can run and shit. I can't swim for nothing, but... You know, it was tough, and I got selected, and I was so proud of myself, man. That's what I want to do. I was tired of seeing Marines get blown up, man. I wanted to go, you know, stop the problem from the root. So I wanted to be a EOD tech and defuse bombs, man. So, you know, in order to do that, I had to re-enlist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got to the wing, and I was the only guy in my platoon that had, like, been on a deployment, and I'd just been on back-to-back. So, this guy named Gunny Blue, he was a drill master at MCRD. Best Marine I've ever fucking met, man. If you see this Gunny Blue, I love you, man. He made me platoon sergeant when I was a corporal. I was telling sergeants what to do and shit.
Wow.
You know, and then I picked up sergeant, you know, right before my 4 year mark. So I was a platoon sergeant the whole time I was in the wing, pretty much, from what I remember.
Wow.
And, you know, one day I'm sitting at my desk and I get a call from the career planner. And he's like, hey, you know, Sergeant Coughlin, I was looking through your re-enlisting packet, but he's like, how do you expect to re-enlist with all those tattoos? Because in third CEB, I didn't have anything on my forearms. It was all upper arms, and it was a half sleeve of tattoos,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I did the right thing, and I took pictures of my tattoos when I went to re-enlist, and I had back tattooed. No one ever said anything to me like, hey, Private, why are you getting all those tattoos? So it seemed, you know, it seemed fine to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then I was just like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, I'm in the tattoo order. He's like, you might not be able to re-enlist, man, blah, blah, blah.
Fuck.
And that was the first I heard of it. And so that brings me to, I extended because I did a commanding general's waiver. That's pretty much when you write a letter to Jesus Christ and everybody else saying why you want to stay in the Marine Corps, what my tattoos mean. I had to take pictures in all my uniforms, a combat camera, yada, 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 all that shit. And I extended to do that. I remember I was instructing corporal's course, man, and it was the first day. So I was in my pickle suit, and I was dogging these motherfuckers out, man, you know, just straight dogging them, you know, eating their faces and shit, going up, down, checking them in, blah, blah, blah. And I went out to smoke, and I got a call from the career planner. He's like, yeah, man, your waiver didn't go through. So I had to sign a thing that said, like, I failed to withhold standards in the Marine Corps and blah, blah, blah. They were trying to give me a reenlistment code where I wouldn't be able to reenlist in any branch of service. I had to try to get that fixed because what I did, I tried to transfer over to the Army. Long story short, I kept going back to MEPS. I kept doing this. It was a blue to green transfer. This was back in 2015. So, I mean, it's probably easier now, hopefully. And, you know, long story short, man, the Army couldn't give me what I wanted. And 2 weeks after I got out, the Army broke some weird ass news to me. And, you know, the first sergeant told me, he advised me, he said, hey man, you can take an MOS you don't want and then fail out of the school and then you can get any MOS you want. I said, first sergeant, I don't know how y'all do it over there in the Army, but as Marines, that's not how I live my life, man. And I drove home to my house, because I was married in the Marine Corps. You know, I kicked my ex-wife out by then. But yeah, I drove back to my house not knowing how I was going to pay my rent. So that's when that transition happened, and I enrolled in school, used my post 9/11 GI Bill, and I actually started working at the chow hall as a cook.
No shit.
So I was a mess attendant first. I was pretty much a glorified lunch lady. You work at the mess hall, man, it's union. You get paid in 29 palms. You get paid like 16, 17 bucks an hour with full benefits, man. You're living fat in 29 palms. You know, so then I got promoted to cook, and I was pretty much doing Marine Corps cook, you know, as a civilian, you know, and he'd let me wear like a red chef coat with like the little insignia on it and shit, you know.
I remember that shit. Yeah. You
know? I heard of some guy. He was a sergeant. He was a grunt.
Yeah.
And, he got blown up or something, and he had a tattoo of his Purple Heart with like his unit sign and all that stuff on his forearm, and he couldn't cover it with his hand, and he got forced out because of that. He got denied reenlistment because of that tattoo.
Because you can't cover it with your fucking hand.
It was, the order was like, it has to be like 3 inches in diameter, and they have to be like, you know, within 3 inches of, more than 3 inches apart. That's why you'd see Marines dude on base, and you'd see they'd have a bunch of tattoos scattered around everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Well, so talk to me about transitioning, man. What was transitioning out of the Marines like for you?
So I'm a pretty positive person, so I tried to stay positive about it, man. You know, I got the job at the chow hall. I went from being a platoon sergeant to working at a chow hall with comm students. Mm-hmm. So I would have to serve. That was very humbling, man. Very humbling. But I met good civilians. The civilian life in 29 Palms is not what I thought it was. You know, it's very, very different from what it looks. And you know, it wasn't for like a year and a half until I started noticing that, you know, my experiences in the military were kind of holding me back in life. I started to call out of work a lot. I started to sleep a lot. You know, I just started to get depressed. I would, you know, lay in bed for like a whole day at a time, you know, shit like that. And nothing was helping, you know, not sleeping for days on end, shit like that. So I quit the chow hall, you know, and I had met so many people there that, you know, I started running with the wrong people again, man. Mm. And, I started, you know, doing shit that I'm not proud of, you know, and, I had lost enough people in my life at that point, and I lost even more, you know, from the streets, from drugs, you know, and, my house got raided, man. And I went to jail for a little bit.
Yeah.
And, when I got out, I still had a problem, and I addressed it, man. You know, the VA helped me with that. You know, the VA saved my fucking life, man. I turned to the VA when I had no one else to turn to, man. Mm. And they, you know, they helped me, put me back on my feet. That's why I'm out in Orange County right now.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things, you know, transitioning out, the VA can help you a lot, man. They really can. They can offer you a lot of help, but you have to ask them. Mm. They're not going to reach out to you and do it them. They're not going to enroll you in shit themselves. You got to ask them.
Yeah.
So, you know, once I found the VA, transitioning into civilian life was a lot easier. And also, being in 29 Palms, don't get me wrong, you know, I was not hanging out with military crowd, but I felt some still connected to the base.
Yeah.
You know, when I was working at the gym or at the chow hall, I always see Marines, all Marines, you know, and it just made me feel still a part of, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because the only time I've ever felt really and truly a part of is in the Marine Corps.
Mm.
You know, Palm Desert is like a small VA. So when I went for help, I went to Loma Linda.
Yeah.
And they took me in for a little bit.
Yeah. And what kind of things were they doing to help you?
They got my meds right. You know, they sent me to rehab. That's what I really needed, man. You know, I found drugs, and drugs helped me sleep for the first time in a long time. You know, it helped that, help those night terrors.
Yeah.
You know, kind of shit, kind of, put those night terrors down for a little bit.
Mm.
So
how are you doing now?
Man, this is the happiest I've ever been in my life, man. After I reached out and I asked for help and realized that maybe I needed some help, you know, I was able to find myself as an adult, man, for the first time in a long time. You know, I'm expecting my first child any day now.
Wow, congrats.
Thank you. My baby mom is she's a Navy veteran. Wow. You know, we both get good money from from the VA. We both get help from the VA, and you know, it's just I've built a support system from the VA, you know, of people that actually give a shit, mm-hmm. you know, and want to help me. And, it's a beautiful thing, man. Yeah. You know, and, in Orange County out here, especially in Costa Mesa, in the west side, that's where I live. We were talking about it earlier. There's a lot of homeless people. There's a lot of meth. There's a lot of all that stuff. And, you know, I've seen guys with army tattoos or eagle lobe and anchors plastered on their leg. And I'm like, hey, bro, what's up? Like, what are you doing out here, man? You know, meet me at this spot tomorrow at 11 o'clock. We'll go to the VA and we'll get you some help. And mm-hmm. they never show up, man. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking. I think it's like 40,000 homeless veterans out there or something, man.
I don't know, man.
And after I got everything taken from me, man, I really thought I was going to be in those statistics, man. Mm. You know? And by the time I was down, you know, my mental state was worse than it ever had been. Mm. You know, flashbacks, all that shit, man.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that depends on your mood and how you approach it. Mm. You know, it's like addiction. It's like anything, you know, it's in all of us, but some people can just sustain it a little better than others.
Is there anything that you do now to, you know, keep a positive mindset or to keep yourself from going back down that fucking dark hole?
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, being with my family, being with my girl. I go to NA meetings, you know, not as much as I used to, but I still do. Mm-hmm. I try to speak on NA panels. You know, I used to sponsor people, not so much anymore because I kind of, you know, I stopped doing the program as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. I try to do homeless outreach as much as I can on West 19th Street, give water, Gatorade, you know, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Dude, I am a huge believer in cannabis helping veterans with PTSD, man. Mm-hmm. I'm a regular cannabis user. And shout out to HVGC. That's a Marine-owned cannabis company. Mm. You know, Hellman Valley Growers Company. It helps, man. It does. Not in a way, because sustaining and blocking out your memories is not how you deal with them.
Yeah.
You know, you have to realize that it's there, but you know, accepting life for what it is, and you know, having that mindfulness and living in the moment, man. That's what the VA and, you know, just me becoming a man has led me to feel. I found the gym in the Marine Corps. You know, that's my love, bro. That's my drug now.
Yeah.
I get up in the morning and hit the gym, you know, first thing. Cause I, came out to Orange County and started my own little business. So I'm on my own time out here kind of thing. So first thing in the morning, man, I'm out there. And the Marine Corps, it teaches you how to be a flesh-eating warrior, devil dog, and all that shit. But it also teaches you how to be a punctual man. It teaches you how to be on time for shit. It teaches you how to build a routine. You know, whether it's an exercise routine or an eating routine or a way that you treat people routine, whatever it is, man. You know, it teaches you to try to uphold yourself, you know, a little better.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm plastered with Marine tattoos, man. Mm-hmm. You know, so people see me at the gym and I have my Marine Corps bag with me. I'm still representing, man.
Yeah.
You know, so I still carry myself a certain way, even though I got tattoos on my neck and I wear chains and shit.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's how I came up to you. I saw the fucking military tats.
Hell yeah.
Oh, this guy's a Marine right here.
Yeah.
Got bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghost of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.